Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, The Step Back, and any place that wants to hire me for freelance work. Today on the show, we're going to recap Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Finals, where the Cavs took a dominant win against the Celtics, a 117-104 final score, in a game that I don't think was as close as that final score would indicate. Today's guest is a writer for FearTheSword.com. It's Mike Zavgano. Mike, what's going on, buddy?
Not too much. Just happy to see the Cavs playing basketball again. It's been a while.
Yeah, those 10 days were kind of... What did you do on the your 10 days off?
As you know, I moved into New York for the summer. I'm working here at a law firm, so I had the time and to kind of settle in here. Get my apartment situated and get ready to go for the series.
A lot of lawyers in basketball Twitter. You know, there's a lot of you lawyers out there. Like David Zavok has a law degree. Nate Duncan and Danny LaRue, I think, are both lawyers. That's an interesting kind of subtrend. I don't know why I find it interesting. I just think it's kind of an interesting parallel there. I don't really know what that means, but it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess people looking for something a little more interesting potentially to basketball, high level game, not like football. There's a lot of advanced stats and stuff going on, so maybe people like thinking through them. Don't really know.
Yeah, that's you're also much more productive than I was in the 10 days off. I slept more, and I watched Master of None season 2. That's what I did. Yeah, Master of None season 2. I might rewatch it if we get to a 9 days off scenario, which is on the table right now. But Cavs win. A lot of things that I thought were interesting. I think Boston has some interesting decisions to make headed into game 2. As we have talked about on the show before, the Cavs are the team so far, and I think this will probably change against the Warriors, that are going to make teams answer these questions and have to make adjustments because the Cavs are just better than these teams. Was there anything about this game like that just really stood out to you as something that was a big advantage for the Cavs and why they won this game?
I mean, you look at the play of Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love. I mean, both of them set playoff career highs tonight. Love with 32 and 12, Tristan with 20 and 9. Both of them were, Tristan didn't miss a shot from the field. Kevin Love was 6 of 9 from 3. And they essentially, again, dominated Al Horford. Horford had 11 points on 11 shots, had 8 rebounds. But the Cavs front court has such an advantage, both in terms of size and ability against this team. And, the Celtics have no front court guy that can switch out onto LeBron. So with how easy the Celtics were just giving up those switches, you saw Kelly Olynyk and Al Horford ending up guarding LeBron. And, that was basically just a bucket every single time.
Yeah, Tristan was just insane in this game. In the first quarter, I think, in the first, 7 minutes or 5 minutes, something like that, he had 4 offensive rebounds and fouls, where he was creating possessions for the Cavs. That's insane. Like that is just incredible how he was able to just kind of move through and with these Celtics big men. Amir Johnson plays the first 5 minutes of this game. We don't see him again. And I think some of that is because he just was useless on the boards. And if that's what he's there for, what's the point of not playing Kelly Olynyk then, right? That's why you saw that brief top, that 5 minutes of Tyler Zeller. Brad Stevens is looking for a solution to the Tristan Thompson problem. I thought he – and Kevin Love in this game. And like LeBron, we're going to look at LeBron and you're going to see his stat line, the, you know, the 38 points, the 15 in the first quarter, the 9 rebounds, the 7 assists, the 2 steals, all that stuff. Like, the front court won this game for me. Like Kevin Love shooting that well from three, looking so comfortable, getting those post-ups in the first quarter, starting the second quarter with that typical LeBron bench unit, and then Tristan Thompson down on the boards. Like, LeBron James is the overall push-through of this game. I think the front court is just as important as a duo and that tandem, especially because they only didn't play Channing Frye in meaningful minutes in this game. The work that was done up front in this game was done by Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love, and Boston, I think, has a real problem there.
Yeah, I mean, the Celtics in this game only grabbed 69.2% of defensive rebounds. That would have ranked dead last by a mile in the regular season this year. The Knicks were last with 74.1% of defensive rebounds. So, I mean, not even close to what you saw teams put up. The Cavs were crashing the offensive glass. They ended the game grabbing 31% of their misses, which would have obviously also then led the league. And, you know, the glass was a problem. Kevin Love and Tristan Thompson out-rebounded the Celtics on their own in the first half. And then, obviously, you know, the performance from the Cavs starters was fairly impressive. They had an 163 offensive rating in the minutes that they played together, and they outscored the Celtics by 18 with that group on the floor. And so, you know, whether it's, I guess, I mean, Gerald Green, I guess, shot the ball pretty well down the stretch. He was 3 of 5 from three. Brad Stevens has obviously started him before in these playoffs. I would assume that would be the adjustment for game two, putting him in that starting lineup. As you said, we didn't really see Amir Johnson after he played the first few minutes of the game and then quickly was removed for Kelly Olynyk. So I would assume that, you know, Stevens just inserts Gerald Green, tries to stretch the Cavs out a little bit. Obviously, that game gives Kevin Love a sizable mismatch in the post on the other end. But, you know, when you're grasping for straws, you kind of have to do something.
Let's get into what you would do if you're Boston headed into game two. I think if I were them, and we're going to talk to Locked On Celtics for Friday's show, so you'll get to hear their take on this from that Boston perspective. I think I would start Jaylen Brown. Like, I think what I would do is I would take out Amir and just, he's not going to play again. I think if he's not going to rebound and he's not going to do anything else, so you just don't play him. I think maybe you have to go to some Jarepko minutes. I think you have to consider it, but I think I would start Jaylen Brown coming out of this game. I'm always impressed by Marcus Smart's ability to irritate the shit out of people. Like, I kind of just think that's hilarious, even though I can understand it being really annoying. I think Jaylen, with how poised he is for a rookie, with how smooth his game is, and I think what he could, in theory, provide. I think if you start him, you bump Jay Crowder up to the four. Yes, it maybe compromises your defense a little bit more than you would like, because you probably have to have Jaylen Brown defend LeBron. That's a lot to throw to rookie, because I think if they see Brown on Kevin Love, they're gonna post Kevin Love immediately, and maybe you just have to do that and live with it, right? Or maybe you try to hide someone on Tristan Thompson. I don't really know, but I think that's what you have to do. I think you have to try to make the Cavs uncomfortable in that way, but I don't really even think that's going to matter. And if you go that way, you're going to be even worse on the rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, Boston needs to find a way to get stops, honestly. I mean, they made more threes in this game than the Cavs did. You know, they were 12 of 38, which is a bad percentage, but the Cavs were only 11 of 31, and yet this game wasn't even close. I mean, The Cavs, in the minutes LeBron played, had a 130.7 offensive rating. So basically, you know, they were just scoring at will in this game. The defense was good when the Cavs stars were playing. It wasn't, you know, some of the elite levels that we saw against Toronto. But Boston needs to find a way to get some stops. And like you said, if they're not going to be able to touch that rebounding advantage, then it's going to be difficult to slow down the Cavs offense. And maybe the only way to go is just try to push the pace a little bit and turn it into, you know, an absolute shootout. And maybe that does require going small, you know, putting five shooters on the floor, trying to space the Cavs out, get some of that three-point luck where, you know, the Celtics, you know, are going to attempt 35 threes. If you have your best shooters out there for as long as possible, maybe that makes number goes up from 12 to 16 or 17 if you get lucky, maybe even 20. And then you just try to outscore the Cavs and maybe win a game, you know, 125 to 120 or something like that if you just punt on the defense entirely.
Yeah, that's probably what I would do in game two. You know, I don't think you have another choice. Like, I really don't think Boston has these other options. Like, I don't know if there's any other line of tweaks they really have. Like, I don't think Zeller is an answer. Like, I don't think I like Trebko. I don't think he's an answer. I think when he defended LeBron in this season and, you know, in years past, it hasn't worked. And I think functionally you need more out of Isaiah, too. Let's talk about that point guard battle for a second. To me, that was the most interesting matchup coming into the series was the Kyrie Irving Isaiah thing, because the Cavs very openly said we're not going to have JR defend Isaiah. I don't think either guy particularly played that well. You know, Isaiah has 10 assists. I thought he did a good job in that department, but he didn't shoot well. You know, 2-7 from three, 7-19 overall. Only got to the line three times. For Kyrie, also only gets to the line three times. 0-3 from three, 4-11 from the field, 6 assists, 11 points for him, and 17 for Isaiah. You know, I think Boston, like, if Kyrie has a game like this again, which sort of is kind of in the vein of how he's played so far, which is in the playoffs, which is, like, not necessarily great, Isaiah needs to have just a functionally better game. Like, I don't, like, aside from what we already talked about, and I'm just trying to outgun the Cavs, like, they cannot, I don't think there is a scenario where they beat the Cavs even once where Isaiah just doesn't have, like, a 35-point game or something like that. Like, that, to me, coming out of this game with this game being so fresh, is, like, one of the biggest takeaways I have.
Yeah, I mean, Ty Lue did say post-game that, you know, their plan is basically the Steph Curry plan, you know, beat up Isaiah, try to take him out of his game. I thought that they were pretty successful in doing that. Obviously, Isaiah is a strong finisher around the rim for his size, but he looked a little lost against Tristan Thompson and against LeBron tonight when he did get into the paint. Going 2-7 on threes obviously doesn't help you create a ton of space if you're him. The Cavs are obviously focused on him, that they don't want him to beat them. I don't know. I mean, as you said, Kyrie, this might not, you know, be the series where he's going to go off. We know that Avery Bradley is one of the best point guard defenders in the league. While the Cavs were using Kyrie on Isaiah, you know, the Celtics were going with Avery Bradley primarily on Kyrie. He's going to make Kyrie's life difficult for the most part. And so you would like to see him, you know, shoot better on jumpers. But this is obviously a series where the Cavs have such significant advantages with their front court that, you know, it might not be the series where you're going to see Kyrie putting up 30 or 40 points as he might, you know, going forward.
Yeah, Kyrie, like, in the finals, I think if they're going to win, if he has a game like this in, like, a Golden State series, they're probably losing that game. Like, I feel pretty comfortable in saying that.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to not be able to get it done if he's putting up 11 points on 11 shots, only getting to the line three times, as you said, 0-3 from three. And the Cavs, if there was one thing that you know, didn't work out well for them tonight, they were only 11 of 31 on three pointers. Kevin Love was 6 of 9, which, you know, means the rest of the team only made 5. LeBron was only 1 of 6 from deep. Kyle Korver the same. And so you would expect them to shoot the ball much better. The Celtics were obviously selling out on the three-point line, much like, you know, the Hawks did in prior playoffs. And that strategy didn't really work as the Cavs kind of had their way at the rim. So I don't know if you see a shift in that strategy, but you don't really expect a guy like Kyle Korver to come out and shoot 1 of 6 from three-point land again. And the Cavs bench overall to go only 2 of 15 from the field. So looking forward, I mean, you think that the Cavs bench and their shooting can improve, and that doesn't make you feel good, I would assume, if you're a Celtics fan.
Yeah, that's kind of a rough existence. Like, when Jay Crowder is, like, your best spot-up shooter, him and Gerald Green, like, that's not a like a good feeling either. Like these are just like this isn't a fun game if you're Boston. Like they have those fans leaving early, which like I can understand. Like I can empathize with their frustration. You know, you can get some of that. So a couple changes for the Cavs that I think are interesting in this game. I don't know if you would have predicted this or thought this. You and I haven't like necessarily talked about this directly, but Richard Jefferson makes his return, and it comes at the expense of not Amon Shumpert, but it comes at the expense of Channing Frye, who ends up playing a little bit in garbage time, 3 minutes for Frye, 12 minutes for Richard Jefferson. I kind of think with the rotation, and this is a bit of, I mean, this is probably a little bit of just a hotter take because it's just coming right after the game. It's not based in a full series of data, you know, which isn't even really that much data. I kind of think the rotation we saw tonight is maybe what Lou uses in the finals against Golden State because it's smaller. It still has some of the shooting. You certainly lose the Frye pick and pops are, of course, great, and you don't necessarily want to eliminate that. So maybe you do go to 10 guys, or maybe you cut Darren Williams' minutes and just roll with LeBron as your secondary creator against Golden State. But like I think Jefferson does have to be part of the plan against the finals, and maybe this is a warm up for that. And I think he has a lot of utility in this series.
Yeah, I mean, I think that most people expected Richard Jefferson to play in this series, so not necessarily a surprise that he was out there. He looked fine. I mean, he didn't really make an impact on the game, really negatively or positively. I guess that, you know, Channing Frye didn't look great against the Celtics in the regular season. That may have colored some of what Ty Lue did in cutting his minutes. Also, the Celtics bench is usually a smaller unit, and that may just, you know, be playing into this as well. I do agree that, you know, you're going to have to use Richard Jefferson, as we've talked about in the past, as one of your primary Kevin Durant stoppers in the finals. And so he's going to need to be ready to go. And so getting him minutes here is definitely a good thing. I do think if Amir Johnson, if Tyler Zeller are going to continue to play in this series, which they may not, that you can steal some Channing Frye minutes in those moments where you're going to force Zeller or you're going to force Amir Johnson to defend in space. And I don't think that they are necessarily okay doing that. And so you might be able to get a couple of those Channing Frye pick and pops or, you know, some of the action where you get Channing Frye open looks. But, you know, maybe it's just not a great matchup for him or just necessarily not the greatest series for him. And that's okay. That's why you have depth. That's why David Green has built this team to have so many weapons off the bench that can play in different, you know, sets or different series.
Yeah, I mean, I think not playing him certainly leans to the idea that the Cavs are going to emphasize rebounding. Because Frye, for as good as he's a shooter, he's an awful rebounder. He's not a very sound technical rebounder. He's not really a guy like Tristan or Love who's going to body guys and be physical with guys to get boards. He's going to get his rebounds when he just happens to be in the right spot and be tall. He's not going to physically chase rebounds. And I think if the Cavs are going to just throttle Boston, they're going to do a lot of their damage by, I think, just dominating on the glass. And they didn't necessarily do that in this game in the second half, but I thought in the first half when they really dominated the game and won the game, they did that. And Love and Thompson, as we've noted, were just big parts of LeBron, a big part of that too. I mentioned this on the Facebook Live show I did over at Phantom, but Love, Thompson, and James combined for 30 combined total rebounds, okay? The front court, the starting front court of Boston, Amir Johnson has 1. Jay Crowder has 8. Al Horford has 8. That's 17. That's a 13-point gap up front. That's kind of crazy. And Jaylen Brown has 9, and that's really nice and all. But like when your front court, your starting front court is getting dominated like that, and Kelly Olynyk comes off the bench and plays, you know, solid minutes and whatnot, but only gets 3 rebounds, and Jaylen Brown's the guy getting a lot of your rebounds, that's a really big problem for Boston.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Avery Bradley is a guy that the Celtics are going to need to rebound, as well as Marcus Smart. And typically those guys have done a decent job crashing the glass, but they don't have the size or the strength advantages in this series as they might against other teams' guards. The Cavs, you know, with LeBron, there was one rebound that Marcus Smart looked like he was going to get pretty easily. LeBron just basically took it from over his head tonight. I mean, those are smaller guys, especially Avery Bradley, and you're going to need them to help you out on the rebounding front. When you have a guy like Isaiah Thomas, who's just, you know, never going to get rebounds in this series, he's averaging 3 a game in the playoffs, but, you know, those aren't impactful rebounds in any way, especially when you have to deal with the length and the size of the Cavs. So I mean, it's difficult. I thought Jaylen Brown did play pretty well tonight, especially, you know, given the tough assignment of LeBron. As you said, there's definitely probably more minutes for him in this series, and that will probably come at the expense of some of those bigger guys. Aside from that, I guess, you know, Jay Crowder did hit some threes down the stretch. Maybe that's encouraging. Maybe Brad Stevens looks to play Isaiah more against those Cavs bench units. I think that would be a worthwhile adjustment to consider, because he's probably going to be able to get off a little bit more in terms of his scoring at the rim when Tristan Thompson is out of the game, when Kevin Love is out of the game. So Brad Stevens might explore that. I thought Amon Shumpert was back to his highly questionable self tonight on the offensive end. And so maybe if you have Isaiah in there and he's getting you buckets, you might be able to gain a bit of an advantage against that Cavs bench units, especially if they're going with Love. Although it looked tonight like LeBron just kind of played the whole first quarter because he was cooking Kelly Olynyk so bad and didn't feel like coming out. So I don't know if that's necessarily an adjustment that they made as opposed to kind of an on-the-fly thing. But those are some of the things in my mind that the Celtics might look to do to try to, you know, get back into this series in game two.
I think those are interesting. I think Isaiah, I think you're right, like, has to play against bench units. Like, I think Isaiah needs to be in where they can best hide him defensively, because I think it was clear from the first moment that the Cavs were not going to respect him defensively. Like, Kyrie is going to cook him. I mean, Kyrie is going to have a better offensive game than what he had. So I think that is certainly something to consider if you're Boston, and kind of like you said. Is there anything from the Cavs perspective that you would change? Besides, like, Kyrie Irving and Kyle Korver hitting more of their threes. Like, that's, like, to me, it's like Kyle Korver missed 5 threes. Kyrie Irving missed 3. J.R. Smith missed his 1 3-point attempt. If you would have told me those guys would have been 1 of 10 from 3 combined, and the Cavs still would have been this good offensively, that, to me, like, that's pretty telling, you know? Like, that's just like, oh, like, what does Boston do?
Yeah. I mean, the Cavs, aside from shooting the basketball, obviously played an extremely complete game. Maybe their effort waned a little bit with such a big lead, understandably so. I don't think that I would change much. Obviously, LeBron played a ton of minutes. That's not really a big deal at this point. We're kind of in that stage. I might look to, you know, maybe it looked like Ty Lue was experimenting with that LeBron at the 5 unit. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it was great. The rebounding was a little questionable. I don't know. I mean, as far as the game went tonight, how can you really complain or anything with just, you know, how dominant the Cavs were in the competitive portions of the game? You expect them to knock down more shots, and that will probably open up other avenues to score. And then, you know, I thought that their defensive game plan on Isaiah was sound. I would expect the Celtics to adjust in some way. So it'll be interesting to see how the Cavs adjust, especially if the Celtics are going to put more shooters on the floor as opposed to having like an Amir Johnson out there or a Zeller out there.
Yeah, I think the Cavs in the second half got a better look at what Boston's actually going to be like in this series when they're going to have more shot makers on the floor and whatnot. Because I think the Cavs are going to be – Boston's going to have open looks to make in this series. The Cavs' defensive strategy is going to be very similar, I think, to what we saw so far with some tweaks, where they're going to let the other team shoot. They're going to let the other team have some open looks. And I think Boston has to capitalize. If Boston's going to win, like, they're going to have Crowder have another game like this, and Horford maybe – I think Horford has to shoot better, maybe take more threes, and Thomas and Brad – like, A.V. Bradley missing 6 threes. We've mentioned this already. Like, that's really significant. If he's not going to be the dead-eye Avery Bradley that we saw, you know, before, like – you know, it becomes, I think their margin and path of victory becomes just so much more narrow and so much tougher. Like, I wonder kind of what we get. But this is just like a gut reaction. I would expect a tighter, more competitive game 2. Like, I'm expecting something on Friday that isn't necessarily, you know, grittier or anything like that, but I would expect Boston to play better offensively, and I think that's just kind of how they're going to make it closer.
Yeah, I mean, you essentially think that the Celtics, you know, series is on the line almost because of the way that this worked out with them being the one seed. Coming back to Cleveland down 2-0, you put yourself in an extreme predicament. So, you know, game two is going to be almost a desperation team game for this team. And so you'd expect Brad Stevens to throw the kitchen sink. It looked like the Celtics thought that they were feeling good when they were making the game a little bit more physical in that third quarter with Marcus Smart flopping and talking and whatever else. So maybe that's something that they look to do, try to, you know, muck up the game a little bit in game two. But I do agree with you that, you know, game two is going to be, an all-out effort game for them in terms of just thinking that their season is probably on the line right then and there.
Let's wrap it up on this thing that just came across my Twitter timeline. It's late. I've been up for a while. Jay King from Mass Live, host of Lockdown Celtics, tweeted this, and I found this. This is a LeBron James quote. "I don't even think we played that great tonight." LeBron James, after game one, after the Cavs won that way. I know this is like LeBron hedging, you know, in some ways and whatnot, but that's quite the quote. That is quite the LeBron James indicative. I mean, is there any truth to that? Like, is there any truth that the Cavs could hit this like other level than what we saw tonight, at least in some ways?
I mean, like we said, shooting the basketball is probably that would be it, I guess. I don't know. That's totally LeBron.
it's such like a LeBron like perfectionist thing.
Yeah, I mean, what can you really say?
Yeah. That's it. I mean, that's it for game one. Like, I don't know how much, like, I actually, like, again, learned. It's, like, hard because it's just, like, I think they clearly are the better team. And, like, this game made me think maybe I should have pulled the gun on picking them in four. Like, maybe I should have actually picked them to, like, sweep when I picked them in five. Like, that's kind of my only takeaway from that's, like, my big thing from this is, like, there is this really big gap. The Boston's margin of victory is very small. I maybe should have picked the Cavs in four. And I think you did pick them in four, if I'm not mistaken.
I did indeed. I was sick and tired of being wrong.
So just go all in on them sweeping.
Exactly.
Mike, let me ask you this, because we haven't talked about it on this pod yet. We'll get out of here. The Magic, David asked to talk to David Griffin. The Cavs apparently said no. There's another report out there from Amico Hoops that indicates that David Griffin's going to offer a big extension offer to David Griffin. Is this surprising to you? Is this the smart play? Like, what do you make of that?
I mean, David Griffin obviously deserves a ton of credit for building this team. He's done an excellent job. I think he deserves every penny he's asking for, whatever that ask may be. I'm obviously not Dan Gilbert. It's obviously not my money, but the guy deserves to be paid whatever he thinks he should be paid, in my opinion. I mean, the way that he's worked around the margins with trade exceptions, with buyout guys, you know, targeting the right players, the right system, the right fits for a LeBron James-led team. It really says a lot about how good of a general manager he is in this league. And, you know, he's obviously done a tremendous job to put the right puzzle pieces in place to win a championship and to be right back in the mix for one the next season. And so I think that, you know, whatever the Cavs have to do to keep him in Cleveland, keep him at running this team and keep him around, they should absolutely be doing.
No disagreements for me there. Again, kind of a predictable game one for the Cavs. They win 117-104. They're up 1-0. They'll game two Friday in Boston, game three Sunday in Cleveland, game four, which could be the end of this series, would be Tuesday in Cleveland. Mike Zavgano, man, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Always great to talk with you.
Yeah, open invitation always to the Lockdown Cavs podcast for Mike. And quick shout-outs to, real quick, I didn't do them the other day, to Trevor Magnani, my blogging partner for like 6 years now because we're old, and to Dylan Stewart. Just thanks to them for their support along the way on this kind of crazy journey. But we'll be back tomorrow again on Friday with a look on the Celtics side of things with the Lockdown Celtics crew, and you'll have a recap on Saturday morning of Game 2. I'm going to watch. I'm going to spend my Friday night watching and recapping that game for you on a podcast. You'll have that when you go do whatever you do on Saturdays. And for myself, for Mike, it's been Lockdown Cavs. The Cavs, again, up 1-0. 7 more wins to another title, 3 more wins to another finals appearance. We'll talk again tomorrow.